What will heaven be like? I suppose the answer you get to that question might depend on who you ask. If you were to ask a group of children, they might tell you, no more bedtime, no more vegetables, no more boo-boos, no more timeouts, no more homework. Even for some adults, heaven will be heaven for what is not there. For some, it'll be heaven because there's no spiders or snakes, mosquitoes. That's one I'm looking forward to. For some, it will be a land where there is no snow, although I think if Jim Redding were here, he would have something different to say about that. The Bible only gives us a glimpse of what heaven will be like. Jesus only mentioned it in passing. Do you know that he addressed the subject of hell much more than he ever addressed the subject of heaven? Perhaps this is because he knew that if we knew how wonderful heaven would be, we couldn't focus on what we should be doing now. We might fall into that category some call of being so heavenly minded we're of no earthly good. Maybe that's why he didn't talk about it quite so much. But the most detailed description of heaven that you find in Scripture comes in the final two chapters of Revelation. And I'd like for us to turn there today. John attempts to put into words the wonders that are revealed to him. And sometimes he can't even do that. It's just beyond the capacity of human language, the things that he were seeing. Streets of gold. Pearly gates. You know, there really will be pearly gates. That's really there in the end of Revelation. The tree of life. Just things that stagger the imagination. Now, in addition to those wonderful aspects of our eternal home, John also describes heaven by what will not be there. I went through these two chapters. I counted no less than a dozen items specifically mentioned as being absent in heaven. And as we conclude our series, Whatever Happened to Sin, I would like to consider the elimination of sin that we won't experience fully until we get to heaven. But John describes it in this text that we're going to consider today. The first thing to note is that there will be no more sin in heaven. The book of Revelation depicts the end of sin. In the previous chapter, chapter 20, the day comes when God condemns sin. All evildoers are driven from his presence. The devil, the Antichrist, the false prophet, death and Hades itself will be thrown into the lake of fire. And then in chapter 21, we are introduced to a new heaven and a new earth that is free from sin forever. John writes in Revelation 21:8, but the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. Not only will heaven be free from all evil, but the very source of evil, the one who tempts us to sin, will also be gone. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. The presence of a perfectly holy God and the spotless Lamb means that there will be no sin or evil of any kind. As Lehman Strauss puts it, every possibility of sin will have been expelled. Now, since there is no sin in heaven. It also, John describes that there is no curse. You get into chapter 22 in verse 3, and he says that there will be no more curse in the new heavens and the new earth. Now this goes all the way back to the beginning, into to Genesis. Remember, God had told Adam and Eve, do not eat from the tree of the garden of the knowledge of good and evil. And he spelled out, if you do that, there's going to be consequences. Well, of course they did. And God had to pronounce the curse. And not only did the curse affect Adam and Eve and their future generations, it affected the earth itself. Remember, God said to Adam, cursed is the ground because of you. I believe that the natural disasters that take place, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, all of these things, I believe that can be traced back to the curse. Because the very earth was cursed because of sin. But when God wipes out all sin, and there is a new heaven and a new earth, it will not be sin cursed at all. There will never be another tornado. There will never be another earthquake or a hurricane or any of those disasters. It'll be taken care of. It'll be wiped out. So there will be no more curse. I find it interesting that the Old Testament closes with the statement, else I will come and strike the land with a curse. The end of the book of Malachi. But when you get to the end of the New Testament, John records that at the new heaven and the new earth, there will be no more curse. Satan will be consigned to hell. All of creation will be made new. The curse of sin will be gone forever. Now, another result of sin being banished is that there will be no separation in heaven. I think this is the meaning of an oftentimes quite confusing phrase. If you look at the beginning of chapter 21 in Revelation, the end of verse 1 says, and there was no longer any sea. Now, that might seem kind of strange. John says there's a new heaven, new earth, and there's no longer any sea. What's that about? Well, no more sea does not mean no more water. Because in fact, he talks about there being a river of life flowing through the city. It simply indicates that the new earth is going to have a different arrangement as far as water is concerned. See, right now, water separates. And this was particularly true before modern technology could get us from one continent to the other so quickly. But the vast majority of our planet is covered in water. And so many commentators see that when we get to heaven, that won't be the case. Now, see, back in John's day, they didn't understand the oceans. They didn't understand the deep waters. And to them, it was something evil. It was something, in fact, you go back in Revelation, the beast came out of the sea. They believed that hell itself was located under the sea. And so the sea was something terrifying. It was something evil. And so some believe that's what this means, that, you know, that there will be no sea because they saw it as negative. I look at it a little bit differently. I personally believe that it goes back to something you see earlier in Revelation. Revelation chapter 4 and verse 6. Here John is describing the throne room of God in heaven. Beginning of chapter 4, he is told, come up here and I will show you the things that are to take place. He is immediately brought into the throne room of God. And in this description, in verse 6, he says, before the throne, there was what looked like a sea of glass, clear as crystal. One of our hymns talks about standing beside the crystal sea. That's where they get that from. It's from that verse. Now, why would there be this sea the crystal sea around the throne of God. I believe that we're here talking about God's holiness and the idea of separateness, that God is apart from His creation, that He stands independently of it. Back in the ancient world, when a king would sit on the throne, they would often have a circular pavement. If they could afford it, it would be made of gold or something precious. But nobody but the king was allowed to step into that area. It was a way of keeping the common people away from the king. Part of it was just a matter of safety. But it was a reminder that you are in the presence of the king. Don't get too close. And I believe that if you look at the context of the beginning of chapter 21, John says there is a new heaven and a new earth. A couple of verses later, he says that now the dwelling of God is with men, and He will live with them. They will be His people, and God Himself will be with them and be their God. There won't be any separation. There will be no separation between God and His people, because even our sin natures will be have been eliminated at that time. There will be no trace of sin at all. And we can go right up to the very presence of God. Unlike what it has been up until now. And I believe in the context of the beginning of chapter 21, that's what it means when it says there will no longer be any sea. There won't be this separation between God and His people. It'll be so close. I've heard people suggest that when we get to heaven, it'll be like being able to crawl up and sit on Daddy's lap as a little child. It'll be that close of a relationship. So there won't be any separation. Now, what is it that separates mankind from God now? It's sin. Sin separates us. From the very first transgression in the garden, sin alienated man from God, and it's been that way ever since. Think about when Jesus hung on the cross. He took our sin upon Himself, and at that very moment, what happened? The Father turned His back. And Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? The answer to that question is sin. Not Jesus' sin, but our sin that He took upon Himself. It separated Him from the Father. And some have remarked that that may have been even worse than all the physical agony that Jesus experienced, was that separation from the Father that He had never experienced before. It was sin. But when we get to heaven, there will be no sin. Therefore, there will be no separation between God and us. Not only that, there won't be separation between us either. There will be no alienation. There will be no hurt feelings. There will be no misunderstandings or misspoken words that separate us. You may say the wrong thing, or maybe you didn't say the wrong thing, but the other person took it wrongly. Now they don't want to talk to you. And you may go for a long time not speaking to the other person. You say, I wonder what happened? What went wrong? Maybe we did something unintentionally. Maybe it was intentional. And they didn't like it. And there's a break in that friendship. There's a gap in that relationship. When we get to heaven, we won't have that. And again, this dates all the way back to the beginning. What happened when Adam and Eve sinned? God confronted them and said, what have you done? Immediately, they're pointing fingers. It was the woman that you gave me. I always thought it would be interesting to have been able to listen in onto their conversation right after that. You don't think Eve kicked Adam and said, oh, that was nice. Sure, that is probably the first marital spat right there came after that passage. The very next generation, you have Cain murdering his brother. And throughout history, you see a legacy of hatred and violence of man against man, broken families and friendships. Why? Because of sin. Because of selfishness. It alienates, it separates. And when we get to heaven, it'll all be gone. And when we get there, we will be forever with the Lord. There won't ever be that phrase, you know, we ought to get together sometime. And sometime never happens. It ever happened to you? Even my oldest brother, we keep, anytime we're together, which isn't very often, or we talk, you say, well, I guess this is that time we say, let's get together sometime, and it never happens. Because that's true. We're so busy. Things are going on. It's easy to lose touch. Why? Because we don't have time. There's so many things pressing on our busy schedules. We just don't have time to spend. I would admit to you, one of the frustrations that I have about only having a limited amount of time to devote to the church is I wish I had more time to spend with all of you, to get to know you better than just an hour on Sunday. That's a frustration of mine. When we get to heaven, time will be no more. We will literally have all the time in the world, and we will have that kind of fellowship where we're not looking at the clock. We're not worried about where we have to be next. There will be no separation. I like the way Max Lucado put it. The book of Revelation could be entitled the book of homecoming, for in it we are given a picture of our heavenly home. I think of homecoming, class reunions, family reunions. You get together, you get to see people you haven't seen in a long time, and you catch up. It's a great time. And it's never long enough. When we get to heaven, there will be no end. Never have to say goodbye. Won't that be great? We'll never have to say goodbye when we get to heaven, because there will be no separation. And that brings me to my last point. There will be no more sorrow in heaven. I personally think Revelation 21:4 is one of the most wonderful verses in all the Bible. He will wipe every tear from our eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. No more sorrow. No more tears. The most fearful cause of tears is the awful reality of dying. But in the presence of God, death shall be no more. You know, I think that's one of the greatest aspects of heaven in my view. Because the older I get, the more I hate death. As I minister with people who have lost family members or close friends, having dealt with losing friends and family myself, it just brings home the awful reality of the wages of sin. I'll admit, I'm to the point now, I see a dead animal on the side of the road, it bothers me. I just hate it. But when we get to heaven, there will be no more death. The sorrow that death brings on eternity, or on earth, will be reversed in eternity. Those torn from us by death in this life will be reunited with us in glory. Our friends and our family that have gone before, they're going to be waiting for us. And won't it be great to get to know those renowned believers that we've read about in the Bible or that we've heard about in history? We'll get to know them. Songwriter Phil Keaggy captured this sentiment. The very first song he ever wrote after committing his life to Christ. It says, when I get home, I will see all the holy men I read about. Peter and John, James, Luke, and Paul, and Brother Tom, without a doubt. And I do believe there will be King David at the harp, a song of praise with every chord. What a sight to see the redeemed and the angels gathered round, worshiping God. the Lord. When we get home, our eternal home, there'll be no more sick and dying. No one is sad, no one is alone, and there will be no more crying. He will wipe away every tear from His children's eyes and put a smile upon their faces. What a happy day when we see our Lord in paradise, crowned as King of Kings. What a day that will be. What a day we look forward to. There'll be no more sorrow because of death. There'll be no more sorrow because of guilt either. How often are we beating our head against the wall thinking, oh, if only I hadn't said that. Oh, if I hadn't done that. Oh, if I had done that when I had the chance. A life full of regret and remorse. It's not going to be in heaven. It's going to be gone. God is going to wipe the slate clean. We won't be dealing with that anymore. Well, some ask, but what about my friends and my family members who don't make it to heaven? What about those that in chapter 20 stand before God and they are sentenced forever to hell? How can I enjoy heaven when I know close people to me are suffering eternally in hell? That's a legitimate question. But I believe the Bible has an answer. I go back to Revelation 21:4. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. I believe that when God wipes the tears from our eyes, and by the way, that shows me that there's tears there. It makes me wonder if what John is thinking about is all of the believers who are watching the unbelievers being condemned. That's going to be a sad scene. It's going to be a horrible, heart-wrenching experience. But I believe that when God wipes away every tear from our eyes, He's going to wipe away more than tears. Isaiah 26:14 tells us, they are now dead, they live no more. Those departed spirits do not rise. You punished them and brought them to ruin. You wiped out all memory of them. Now, I realize this might sound cold, and I don't mean it to be. But I believe that once we get to heaven, even their memory will be wiped out. Because how could we enjoy heaven remembering all of those who aren't there? And I believe that by God's grace, He is simply going to erase the memory of them. Now, that's not much comfort now, but it will be comfort then. There will be no more sorrow in heaven. I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to that day. I am looking forward to the day when I stand before the Lord and know that all of the horrible things we put up with in life are all past. As Keith Green put it, I can't wait to get to heaven. And like I said, the older I get, the more I feel that way. Now I realize that we're here for a reason. If God didn't have something for us to do here on earth, He'd have taken us already. I believe that. So we do have a job. As long as God gives us life and gives us breath, He has a purpose for us here. And we need to do all that we can to discover and fulfill that purpose. Ultimately, that purpose is to bring as many as we can with us, so that when we get to heaven, they will be there as well. But as we wrap up this series, I think that one day we're going to look at each other, say, whatever happened to sin? It's going to be gone. All of the selfishness, all of the sorrow that it brings, the separation that it brings, it's all going to be gone. What a wonderful promise we have to look forward to. And what a great incentive we have to live our lives today.